I should have turned that on. First item is consideration of our agenda. I would entertain a motion to approve or any discussion thereof. There's, I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. Vote occurs on the motion. All in favor will vote aye. I believe it's unanimous. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of our meeting of December 20. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of December 20. We have a motion and a second. Is there any, are there any amendments to the minutes? Hearing none, the vote will occur on the motion. All in favor will vote aye. All opposed, nay. It's unanimous. The next item is an action item and an important one, and that is the approval of our bylaws and procedures, if we're able to get that far today. And our process that, and I want to thank Mrs. Hines for putting a huge amount of time, now over years, into the process of updating and improving our governance documents. And recently, our colleagues may not be aware that Mrs. Hines has put even more time recently into meetings with me and with staff, and we've spent a lot of time getting to the point we are today, and that is having before us the result of a huge amount of staff work that has prepared these documents for our consideration. A lot of what we have before us comes from the, a lot of the recommendations come from the report that we commissioned by outside counsel. The law firm, the Cadwallader, the law firm, did a report for us, as everyone knows, recommending possible changes in our processes and our governance. And staff has taken those and other suggestions that have been made by members of the committee and other members of the board and have prepared for us, and we are going to work our way through documents that we have in our packet. So I'm going to turn it over, unless other committee members, Mrs. Hines, you probably do have some thoughts here because you've been so heavily engaged in this now for about 3 years, I guess, two and a half, three years.
It was 2 years ago. This meeting was my first meeting.
Okay.
So
2 years.
Yeah. I would echo what Mr. Barnes says about the incredible staff support we've gotten. Again, Ms. O'Keefe Shop and Bruce in particular
they've been working all through the holidays, I would note on, which is
these are the same great folks who helped us the first time through, and so we have just a tremendous amount of confidence in their knowledge of the details of the documents and their ability to help us through this. The one thing I would say is this is probably the first of 2 days that we're going to spend doing this work, and today our focus is the procedures and the bylaws, and the bigger task is actually the code of ethics. And you did receive those documents, you know, this week because they're dense and they're complicated, and so we really encourage you to spend some time in advance of the next meeting in 2 weeks. Trying to sort through what you think about these things. We've got great recommendations from staff, but these are complicated, and if you were here when we did the first code of ethics, you'll remember that we really did, we did labor quite intensively. And I think, honestly, most of the Cadwallader suggestions are very helpful, but they're complicated, and they are intertwined, and there are decisions to be made about what we think is best for us. So, I think that's worth saying too. And from the point of view of working with our colleagues from our jurisdictions, I think this is one of those things we're checking with the other people from your jurisdictions is also really important. So.
Thank you. Are there other opening comments before we dig right into the work we have before us? If not, Carol, you want to take on this task of guiding us through?
Yes, we will.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnes. And with me, as Ms. Kynes mentioned, is Bruce Heppen, Deputy General Counsel. So there are two documents, well, actually three. There's a summary of the Cadwalader governance recommendations, and that summary shows whether or not a compact amendment is required or not. Most of them, as you all have observed before, do require compact amendment. And there are a few comments about that summary. Then the bylaws document itself takes those comments and makes them at the appropriate place in the bylaws, notes what Cadwalader has recommended, and additionally, other recommendations that have been received by board members are also noted on the respective pages. So the plan is simply to page through it. It's this is not a presentation type of issue, so we really have to go through page by page and have the board members and the committee members consider the recommendations. So we'll start with page one. And that first highlighted area is in Article 2. That is a Cadwalader recommendation. It is, I think, a reiteration of comments that have been made in the past by other organizations that kindly provided their comments on governance. And it's really just a recommendation to have a statement that the board focus on high-level policy. This is something that the board and the governance committee took up before, talked a lot about, and I think there is already language in the bylaws themselves, but of course that's your judgment call if you want something else said.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I think that recommendation of focus on high policy was before us when we did the bylaws. It was pretty unanimously suggested by the various study groups. My view is we hit it pretty well with what we now have. I would be very concerned that we in any way create a bylaw that suggests we're only a policy board and not responsible for oversight. But frankly, those who lived through the National Transportation Safety Board investigation got that back in spades from the board, that you can't just say, I'm policy, everything else is somebody else. So, you know, my view is we've been there. It's really up to us to make sure we stay there. It's not something that writing it in a bylaw would achieve. It's really how we behave.
That's actually addressed in the first two paragraphs of Article 2, which clearly emphasize the policy and oversight role for the board.
I would agree with Mr. Downey that we really did, I think, wrestle this one well to the ground and strike the right balance.
Is there a conflicting view here? If not, we'll move to the next item.
It's two. There's a Mr. Downey has suggested that the general section concerning ensuring a safe and reliable system, and again, this is under Article 2 of the board's responsibilities. Mr. Downey has suggested enhancing the section with a reference to, I think, an explicit statement concerning oversight of safety issues. That could be accomplished. There is no, I might say, we have not actually placed language in the text, leaving that up for the board's direction. But the recommendation can be easily accomplished by having, a separate section that simply states that the board provides oversight on safety issues. Or, of course, it could be added to existing Section 2 either way.
Please. Yeah, where are we?
I'm working. Well, what we're actually doing, just to go back again, I'm actually paging through the bylaws.
Oh, okay.
Right. So.
Okay, I was. Oh, I had the same confusion that Mr. Downey had.
So this document, this matrix, is just a summary of all the Cadwalader recommendations.
Oh, okay.
And a notation as to whether or not there's a compact amendment required, and there are a few other notes. So that stands on its own just as a reference, but each of those recommendations is also a notation in the sideline at the appropriate place in the bylaws. Addition, so they'll all be, so Cadwalader will be interspersed with the board recommendations as they appear in the document, which seemed just the most straightforward way to go through things. So, back to page two, top of page two, comment E2. And this is a recommendation from Mr. Downey that there be an explicit statement concerning oversight of safety issues. And again, my recommendation would be to be set forth separately as a separately numbered item to give it emphasis. Alternatively, you can simply add and provide safety oversight on safety issues into paragraph two. I think the separate notation obviously gives it emphasis.
I think it's a good suggestion.
I don't think there's any harm. I wonder if inserting it in the first sentence, the first line of number two could also work. So it might say, following public hearings, adopt rules and regulations and provide oversight for the safe, convenient, and orderly use of all the transit facilities. I mean, it goes back to that dual role, and it just reiterates it.
Either one is fine. That's the committee's direction.
Any objection to that suggestion? If not, let's do it.
So that will be incorporated in existing paragraph two.
Yes.
Second comment is comment E3 on page two. And under section C2, Mrs. Hines has suggested revising this phrase to state develop, adopt, and monitor a strategic plan whose priorities and targets are linked to performance measures. So Mrs. Hines provided explicit language for the committee's consideration.
We didn't have a strategic plan at the time we wrote this 2 years ago.
Okay.
Any objection to that suggestion? Hearing none. It's approved.
Comment E4 is in reference to Section D, Oversee Planning Operations and Customer Service. Mr. Downey has suggested a reference to the board's adoption of specific service standards. So again, right, service criteria, service standards. So again, that can be integrated into to B2, or it can be a separately numbered section.
Were you suggesting a separate, just incorporated in it? Yeah. So objection to that? If not, we'll move to the next slide.
On page three, there's a comment under E7, and the Cadwalader group noted a potential discrepancy between language. And this particular language says avoid individually directly directing or supervising the CEO or any WMATA employee or contractor. There's also a really stronger language in the bylaws, and there's actually, I believe, there's stronger language in the bylaws, and I thought, yeah, there's also language that's definitive in terms of a prohibition in Article 4 on page 5, which is in the middle of that paragraph, which states no board member individually shall direct or supervise the CEO or any WMATA employee contractor. So actually my recommendation would just be to delete E7. It seems we have the statement.
Yeah, the other
strongly.
Statement's stronger. Yeah. Why don't we take out the weaker one?
So
that's a good thought.
Mr. Chairman, Just on that, and I agree with the general counsel's recommendation to delete it here, but I'll mention it here. I think it should be clear, however, that board members will talk to employees. And I'm not exactly sure what is meant by directing or supervising. Is this meant to be that board members shall not talk to employees?
That's not the way I would interpret it.
That's not the way you would interpret it.
I think the emphasis is on directing.
Yeah.
And so you can't go to the station manager at your usual station and say, I want you to change this about how this station works. Our task is to work always through the manager. And I wonder if that notion is the one that should be here, which is, you know, the one of we work through the manager to affect change.
Well, I think that the board CEO relationship, Article 4,
covers that.
I think, well enough. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments on that point? If not, we'll move to the next one.
So
that was mine. That's what I thought we'd agreed to strike that ESEP.
Seems like the easier solution, but
because the other statement is stronger.
Pointed out mm-hmm. the discrepancy because yeah. I think our goal in drafting it was to go to the stronger.
The next comment on page 3 is comment E6, and this is just a conforming change consistent with the board's prior action on the reporting relationship with the general counsel.
Which section was already adopted.
Which the board has already adopted, and this change is to try to pick up that language in the resolution. And
that's a necessary change, really. Any questions about that one? If not, we'll move to E7.
Seven is a recommendation. That's on page 4. And these changes, there are a couple different changes in the first paragraph of Article 3. Mrs. Hines has suggested electing two vice chairs rather than a vice chair and an optional second vice chair. And then the second comment is a recommendation to delete the sentence that says, these officers shall be elected without regard to jurisdiction of residence or representation. And then finally, I'm trying to address everything that's in this first paragraph comment. Mrs. Hines suggests adding these officers plus the past chair shall form the executive committee, shall include one representative from each signatory, one from the United States. And then there's a different recommendation. Mr. Danny would like to maintain the policy that officers are selected from the board at large and on the basis of qualifications and experience, and there is no expectation of any pattern of rotation. So we, and then there's another comment from Mr. Downey who offers the suggestion that we could have one vice chair whose sole purpose is to reside in the absence of the chair, or there could be three vice chairs of co-equal status and having the interests of D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and the U.S. at the table in the authority's leadership. So there are quite a few comments about this first paragraph put on the table.
Mr. Barnes.
Fine.
If I might speak to my set of suggestions, and I think this is the place where we have the most work to do, quite honestly. and I have since rethought just going with two generic vice chairs, and I really think we should stick with a first vice chair and a second vice chair. And part of my reason for that is that every other organization that I'm part of has a way that people move into leadership that can be depended on. And And I think that that leads to orderly transitions. And so I really think we should keep first vice chair, second vice chair. I really think that the past chair should serve on the executive committee, again, because it leads to orderly transitions. And then the last thing I would say is we've commented several times over the last year and a half that the absence of Maryland in our leadership team is an issue for us as we go to do our work with all of our various, stakeholder groups. And so I think defining an executive committee that has clearly a person from each of our major groups that's playing is actually really important for how the region perceives us. So my suggestion is that we elect a chair, a first vice chair, and a second vice chair. We establish an executive committee made up of one person from each of the various signees. We have the past chair serve on that executive committee. And, when you say these officers shall be elected without regard to jurisdiction of residence or representation, I get a little stuck there because, in fact, we are saying we want to present a front.
I didn't say that. That's what's in the bylaws.
It is, right. No, I know. And as I've thought about it, Mort, that's all I'm saying. As I've thought about it, if part of what we're trying to do is show that we're all working together for the good of the region, then having at some level regional representation that we can count on when we go out to the public, when we go to our funders, is actually really important. So that's a little bit different than what I had initially suggested, and as I say, I have reflected on it more since I did it, and that would be my suggestion at this point.
Sure. Mr. Downing.
Yeah, I certainly agree that if we have the broad representation of the whole region, that is very important. I think that was what I had suggested. There are different ways we could achieve it.
Exactly.
But I am concerned with eliminating the principle that we do not follow a rotation of officers. That was significantly debated as the new bylaws were put in place. It was a strong, strong recommendation from some of the outside groups. We might achieve it in de facto decisions, but I think we should not lock in a principle that people automatically move up a ladder or automatically rotate around the region. The needs at any given time may be different, and I think we should have, as we did when we first adopted the bylaws and then the two succeeding elections, we looked for the person who could do the best job. I think it sends a message that we're heading back in the other direction if we eliminate something that was strongly sought. I asked Mr. Dyke's opinion. He was one of the authors of one of those reports, and I think it was a leading recommendation.
I'm not a member of the committee, but I'll respond.
You're always welcome, Mr. Dyke.
Okay. It was one of the major recommendations of the joint COG Board of Trade task force that there not be a rotation, that in essence the board pick the person that they think is best qualified at that point in time. And I've certainly been a member of organizations that have the same setup you alluded to where people move up. And I mean, that serves some purpose, but I've never really been enamored with that approach. I mean, it's just happened to have been the approach, and so we followed it. But I think having the ability to pick the best particular person at that time is, I think that's something that we should have that flexibility to do that.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Bowser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't here for that debate, but I'm pleased to be here now. And I think that we've raised a lot of issues and certainly a lot of things. All the signatories, in fact, have passed laws at the state and at the district level to implement some of these recommendations. We just passed the law in the district to do the same, to create terms, for example, that would ensure that there's fresh thinking on the board board to limit board members to two terms, which would also ensure that transition. Also, we agreed then to say that the board chair should serve for 2 years because we think it's important to have to grow in that expertise. And all of these things together, I think, are doing what we're aiming to do, and that's to have the best thinking about these issues. We also did something else, and a lot of people had some pause with it, but each jurisdiction decided to implement qualifications for membership. So when I come to this table, I say everybody's qualified to be chair. Because each of the signatories has said that these are the representatives of our jurisdiction in our interest. So then I have to ask myself if this argument persists, it may be that some jurisdictions won't get a chairmanship ever. And so as a representative of the District of Columbia, I don't know that is a position that is in our interest or the board's interest. These questions of who's qualified obviously are subjective, and I think we're going to see how that plays out. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us when we cast those votes to make those decisions. I do think the notion of having three vice chairs from each jurisdiction all serving on an executive committee is one that I could support. I could also support the notion of the executive committee being the slate of candidates that the board considers at the next election. That's not to say that it would have to go in that rotation, but I think that the executive committee could form the slate considered by the whole board for the board chairmanship.
Well, let me jump into the discussion. First of all, I really like your suggestion, Mrs. Hines, of having the board chair that's stepping down become part of the executive team of the board. I think that's a very good, very useful suggestion. I do agree with those who believe that the chair and all the officers should be elected without regard to jurisdiction. We're a regional body, and we ought to be able to pick the best leadership among us from wherever they may be. And yes, everyone's qualified, but some people are perhaps better able to lead us as chair of the board than others of us. So I like that change that was made the last time the bylaws were looked at, which added that language of the officers should be elected without regard to jurisdiction. I guess those would be my main comments. I would want to see the amendment to bring the former board chair into a continuing formal role as part of the executive committee of the board. I'm sympathetic to the argument that we need to show the region that everybody's represented, but I virtually guarantee you that nobody in the Maryland legislature knows who's vice chair of the board of WMATA, or cares really. They do perhaps know who the chair is, because the chair is sort of our visible spokesperson. I don't know that we need to focus on which jurisdiction we're from as we select leadership. But I understand there's strong differences on this item, so we may need a vote here. But do we have we've got some specific recommendations in front of us. Maybe we should take them for lack of a better process. Maybe we should take them one by one. Mr. Steins has suggested two vice chairs. And then adding the,
The past chair.
Former board chair. So I'll put that in the form of a motion and see how people react to it. We'd have a chair, two vice chairs, and the past chair would be the executive committee of the board. Do I have a second? I have a second. Is there discussion?
Again, Mr. Burns, I would say I would prefer a first vice chair and a second vice chair for the reasons that I stated, but I don't think, regardless of which way we go, that we should have the second vice chair be optional. So, you know.
That's sort of a strange process to have an optional.
Yeah, I think that
optional
is.
Optional vice chair.
Yeah, we need, whether we have a first and a second or we have two vice chairs, I think we need to regularize that and not make that optional. And I definitely will support the idea of adding the past chair into the executive committee.
I think my preference and my motion would be that two people be called vice chair rather than one be called first vice chair and the other called second vice chair. But
just to, if I might interject, there is, Mr. Evans pointed out on page 5, there is a related provision of the bylaws. Under section C after 4, there is, if you will, a succession expressed so that the first vice chair serves first and the second vice chair serves in the absence of the chair and the first vice chair.
Maybe just to preserve it, maybe we should have a first and a second. Yes, I agree with your point there that we shouldn't have automatic. I believe we ought to be selecting whoever the best person at that time is. And maybe it means Marilyn never gets it. Somehow we'd survive.
All right, so Mr. Barnes, is your proposal at the moment that there be a first vice chair and a second vice chair, and that the executive committee include the chair, the first and second vice chair, and the past chair?
The previous chair.
So are you asking for a vote on that at this point?
Well, we're discussing it.
We also structure it so that those four would not cover all four jurisdictions.
Well, that's not in my motion.
Yeah.
But do you want to amend the motion?
I would propose that as an amendment.
I would second his amendment of the motion.
Well, I sense a jurisdictional desire here on the committee, so I'll amend my motion. I'll accept your friendly amendment. Any further discussion? Vote occurs on the motion. All in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Are we clear what we're doing here?
I just have a question about the second sentence. Is there a consensus that the sentence, these officers shall be elected without regard to jurisdiction of residence or representation, remain in?
I think that's a separate vote.
Yeah, that was my question.
Mr. Sorrells?
Yeah, I have a question.
I don't know how it could, given that we've decided that the four people have to represent four different jurisdictions. I don't know how we could keep in that language, even though I like that language personally. I think that's a better way for us to operate, but I appear to be in the minority here.
I have a question, clarification, mainly my relationship to the board. This is now a formal establishment of an executive committee, which has not appeared before. Question is, what is the role of the executive committee, and how does the CEO relate to that executive committee?
Mr. Sorrells, could I ask a question? How do you relate at the moment to the first and second vice chairs?
I really, my relationship is with the chair of the board.
Uh-huh.
After that, the chair of the board may then
brought
others in, but my relationship is to the chair of the board.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is correct.
Right. I think that's correct, too. I think that the creation of an executive committee is a tool to help the chairman on any number of issues if he or she chooses to consult in an orderly manner. It creates a, that's my view.
And that's fine.
And there's not a delegation. I mean, sometimes there's a delegation of powers.
Right.
But we meet every 2 weeks. I don't know why you'd need a delegation of powers.
And I would just suggest that you might want to define the role of the executive committee. It's advisory. That's great. But just so it's understood.
How would you propose to define the role of the executive committee?
I think it is a body that the chairman may use to as a sounding board, as a, you know, whatever. It really would depend upon the chairman. But I also think that the other part of it, and I guess I'm thinking more specifically in the near term, Mr. Barnes, is, you know, part of our task over the next 12 to 18 months is going to be, you know, going out and beginning to build the consensus around additional funding for the system. And so I would see the executive committee potentially helping to take the lead on that, given that potentially they have those relationships that help that happen.
We could say something to the effect that members of the executive committee will assume responsibilities assigned by the chair. So it's
the chair's body.
But the executive committee is made up of the chair, the two vice chairs, and the previous chair. And members of the executive committee will assume any those responsibilities assigned by the chair. Is that that? Broad enough to encompass what you have in mind?
Yeah.
Would that work?
That's perfect.
Is that acceptable to everybody? If so, we'll go with that.
Mr. Barnes?
Yes.
Before we leave that particular paragraph, it starts with the clause as established by Compact Section 7. The board annually elects a chair and vice chair. So the compact actually directs a chair and vice chair, does not require a second vice chair. That's always been a procedural determination of the board. So when it comes back, that first clause will simply be deleted, consistent with the board direction. So to just start, the board annually elects a chair, two vice, you know, first vice chair, second vice chair, and then on as the board has.
Yeah. Okay.
And then there are two other matters on this page. One is not apparent. First one is E10. Mrs. Hines says, and that relates to section A3. Mrs. Hines has recommended that the provision should be read in consultation with the governance committee. Appoints board committee chairs and members. Chair also appoints any special or ad hoc committees that may be needed. So that's the second recommendation on this page.
Our current chair has appointed special committee. Does she not have authority to do so? She did it. Do we need to add that in here? Maybe we do.
No, it was there before.
Oh, it's in there. Okay. Already.
The difference here is consultation
okay.
with the governance committee.
Yeah, I asked Mrs. Hines about this when we spoke a week or two ago about these items, and it seems to me it just adds another layer of sort of bureaucratic activity. If we've elected our chair. Our chair can work with all of us to figure out who's best to manage all the various responsibilities. Presumably, make judgments that are in the best interest of WMATA. Do we really need to require a consultation with this committee? I don't think it's really necessary. I mean,
may I just ask for a point of clarification? Does the chair make the appointment? Is it that the board, does the board approve the,
yes.
the slate? So she's really recommending the committee chairs.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct. and the committee.
So that is the, really the necessary consultation with all the board members, because all the board members can, you know, we know we're going to support the chair's recommendations, but it is really a recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's voted on by the full board.
It is voted on, okay.
Let me ask another question.
So the points isn't really correct.
A point is not correct.
Points. This should say recommends.
Recommends to the board.
But on special or ad hoc committees, she or he does not necessarily have to bring that to the board. So this has to be probably teased apart into two parts, which is recommends committee chairs and committee members to the board, and then has the ability to appoint any special or ad hoc committees that may be needed. I will just say the suggestion came about as people were talking about who was best for what, and arraying our talent to say that is totally dependent on one person seemed to me a little much, given the other back and forth we've had.
Well, with the clarification that I've forgotten that the board has to approve the chair's recommendations, does that satisfy your concern?
I think I'm outnumbered here, Mr. Barnes, so I'm happy to withdraw the suggestion.
Means it almost guarantees some consultation because the chair doesn't want to lose the vote.
So can I go back up to the top? We did approve that the past president will be part of the executive committee, so that language is going in the first paragraph.
Yes.
And did we remove the elected without regard to jurisdiction?
No.
That's still there.
Not yet.
Okay. No, I just, because we moved down, that was why I asked.
Just sharing a point of history. As I gather, I wasn't here at the time, but under the old rotation system, people might become chair on their very first day, which, again, was one of the things that had been a concern, because the rotation was by the seat, not by the individual.
Right. But Mr. Downey, I would say that what we've just agreed to would preclude that from happening.
I think it does.
And I think that's... that wasn't a great practice, just as changing the chairman every year may not be a great practice, although I will say my board changes the chairman every single year, and it's worked just fine for Arlington for a very long time. So it depends. And we still say we elect annually. We make a decision whether we will continue someone for a second or potentially a third year. But I think the situation that everybody sort of cites of somebody coming in new and having a chair is not possible under these circumstances. There is at least one other person from the jurisdiction who could serve in the executive committee, and there's no requirement that it has to move in a particular way.
Okay, any other questions there, Carol?
I'm sorry, I'm so confused. Are we leaving in the statement, these officers shall be elected without regard to jurisdiction of residence or representation?
Yes.
There was no motion on that.
That's my understanding.
And then, thank you, then a minor editorial on section A, paragraphs 8 and 9. There should have been a line through on the general counsel,
yes,
consistent with the board's prior actions.
Right.
So when it comes back to you, there will be.
Yes, thank you.
The next comment is on page 7. It's really simply a correction of punctuation. Semicolons have been changed to commas.
Without objection.
Right. My English teacher mother would be very happy.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a clarifying question on page 6 under the description about the JCC. Are those meetings open public meetings?
The JCC meetings? They've always been considered extended staff meetings.
Okay.
You know, staff of WMATA and staff of the jurisdiction, so they have not, to my knowledge, been declared to be open. I don't know what their practice has been.
Okay.
I will say I've advised them that they're not required to be open, but of course, it's always their option to open.
We actually discussed this at a lot of length, and the language that's here really represents what we understood, which is they can invite people to join them, but it is not an open public meeting, because information is shared with them. That's right.
The next recommendation is on page 11, comment E12. It relates to section B1, committee chairs. Mrs. Hines suggests adding committee chairs should consult with their vice chair when planning meetings.
The explanation is simply that sometimes the vice chair has to step in and run the meeting, and if they don't know what's on the agenda, it's kind of hard to do. And we have had instances this year where that hasn't happened.
This can actually be done by Loida and her staff when they're sending out the materials to the chairs. It can send it to the vice chair so that the chair and the vice chair. I mean, I would sort of hate to feel that every committee chair would have to make a phone call to the vice chair every month to review the agenda or feel they're violating the bylaws if they hadn't done that. I don't know. I don't feel strongly one way or the other about it, but.
I think it's good practice, but not necessarily.
Yeah, it is good practice. Yeah. Consultation is always good practice in this kind of thing. Okay, no objection to this one? Hearing none. So ordered.
Page 12. On section C, under the Finance and Administration Committee, comment E13. Mrs. Hines suggests adding reference to the business plan. So the specific language would insert an adherence to the business plan. And that would go between management and the word and, about five lines down.
I think that's a good suggestion. Any other questions?
I think it's very good that we're moving in the direction of having a business plan that covers more than 3 years. It's not something that is adopted. So whether we could, in effect, create a requirement that the budget adhere to the business plan, as opposed to saying we should have a business plan, something I'd suggest consideration of.
Well, if somebody can come up, I think what I was going for was a reference to the fact that we have
that
it.
We have one.
In the same way that earlier I was trying to put a reference to the strategic plan in.
Yeah.
If we're not monitoring adherence to it, perhaps there's something, you know, assures that one is created or, I don't know, it's a very dense paragraph, so I struggled with how to include it. But I think making sure.
Thank you. It's referenced in some way that is
yes,
an expectation.
I think that's, and you know, maybe staff has a better suggestion.
Yeah, maybe if staff can give us a reaction to what do we need in there to be sure there's a business plan without tying our hands, that everything is then subject to the business plan.
Well, I think you can just insert and adopt the business plan or recommend
the
adoption.
But we're not adopting. We don't adopt the business
yes.
plan. I get sense from Rich.
Right. Oh.
You don't want to see us adopt the business plan.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe it's just reviews the business.
Review the
business.
Maybe be
reviews
review
is
the
right
plan.
Word.
Yeah, we should play a part in it.
The Finance and Administration Committee should, you could add review the business
review
plan.
Review the business
okay.
plan.
Rather than the adherence. Any objection to that? Hearing none. We'll move to the next item.
Page 13, in reference to the Customer Service and Operations Committee, it's really a grammar change, so that it would simply say, Customer Service and Operations Committee ensures that.
Without objection. So ordered.
And then also, in that same paragraph, comment E 15, it's kind of suggesting adding a reference to the RAC and the ACC.
Yeah, I thought this was a very good suggestion.
That's,
without objection. So ordered.
There's an editorial deletion of general counsel on that page.
Right.
That's just a conforming edit.
So we just conform it to whatever the paragraph was.
Right. We'll conform
it. Yeah, that'll have to be modified.
So I actually think that's... No, we have one more. Page 15, since the board has adopted a travel policy, Mrs. Hines has recommended the creation of additional article that specifically refers to the travel policy. So the language for that is included in the note.
Any objection?
No objection.
Hearing none. So ordered. Good suggestion.
That concludes the comments on the bylaws.
So we will present these recommended changes to bylaws to the board.
Do you need a motion? Mr. Barnes, you want a motion?
I think we probably should have a formal motion to recommend.
Just point of order, Mr. Point of information, Mr. Barnes. I'm sorry to have to backtrack, but just on the travel policy, you're going to incorporate it in the same way you've done the code of ethics. So it's just by reference. Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Barnes, would you like a motion that we recommend the board approve the bylaws as
entertain such a motion.
Amended and discussed today? Who would move that?
Do I have a second?
Second.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, the vote occurs on the motion. All in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. It's unanimous. Well done. Now we'll quickly move into the procedures. And again, utilize the same process that we utilized for the bylaws. Carol?
So on page one, this is a Cadwalader recommendation. This is comment E1 on the procedures. It's a recommendation that, in addition to sharing requests, that the procedure should require the board secretary to share staff responses with all board members.
Good idea.
It's really a conforming change. There's a provision in the bylaws that also requires that.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Just one final page. On page six, we have several recommendations from Mrs. Hines and one from Cadwalader. So the first paragraph, paragraph 7A, Mrs. Hines has made several recommendations, E2, E3, and get to her final one, which is directed to paragraph B. So the first is that Mrs. Hines suggests that the procedures require the board chair to consult with the governance committee regarding committee membership.
We already decided not
to
do that.
And that's really right. And the second, E3, is a recommendation that the procedures require the principal board member chair safety and security, finance and administration, and customer service and ops committee only, and that there would not be a requirement for principal to chair the other committees.
Mr. Barnes, if I could speak to this one just for a minute. When we wrote the procedures last year, we had actually a conversation about this. There was no such language in the procedures previously, and chairmanship could come from anywhere, and there were definitely instances where alternates had chaired committees. I'm not exactly sure why we ended up with they had to all be chaired by principals, but that is where we ended up. I think that as we look at the amount of work and we look at the number of committees and we look at the variety of other things, that we tie our hands here in ways that perhaps we would not. I would be happy to see the whole sentence go away and just say we'll make our choices based on who we think is best. I am sensitive to the fact that three of the committees are quite large and carry, not that the others don't have significant responsibility, they do, but they're higher profile, higher visibility, which is why I suggested that those be chaired by a principal. But I do think we limit ourselves by saying they all must be chaired by principals in ways that really don't necessarily serve the board to the best of our ability.
Is there discussion, further discussion of this suggestion?
I mean, I think this related, I don't recall exactly why it wound up in the procedures in its current form, but I think it related to a concern expressed from outside this room that principal directors are the only ones who should, speak and be spoken to, and that there are those who believe there not only shouldn't be, there shouldn't be alternates. If there should be alternates, they shouldn't be,
they should be alternates.
They should just be alternates. And I think this was kind of a compromise to protect the fact that we do have alternates, but we're not putting them forward exactly the same. I don't feel strongly about it. I would feel strongly that if we were to accept the idea that certain committees should be chaired by principals, I think the governance committee is another one that really should be chaired by a principal. And the whole idea is that it's dealing with the governance and the authority.
Mr. Barnes.
Ms. Bowser.
This is one of the issues where I think I disagree with Mrs. Hines, because I think now we're trying to kind of rank the committees, and I have some pause about doing that. I don't know that I could probably give it a little bit more thought in terms of how I'd rank them, but I see them all as pretty
all important.
And I see the contributions of the alternates also is being very important, but I don't think I'm there right now.
Just to clarify then, Muriel, you believe we should leave it as it is, that each committee shall be chaired by a principal board member? That your name's Bill.
That's, yeah, yes.
Okay.
Well, I think I'm hearing that there seems to be a consensus for no change here. Am I correct in my understanding of that? My colleagues are aware I've had a view that the board's too big, and that a better practice would probably be to have a smaller number of principals and not have the alternate process. But that's a compact change, and that's not going to happen because this committee recommends it. So am I correct in hearing the view here that there'll be no change to this item?
Yes.
All right, then we'll move to the next item.
Comment E4 includes both a Cadwallader recommendation. It's just a general recommendation to reduce meeting frequency. And Ms. Barnes has also made the suggestion that there be one day per month on which all committees and the board meet.
This is something that last year was suggested by our chair, Mrs. Hudgens, and our general manager, and that I strongly agreed with, that we move to a process whereby the committees meet in the morning, the board meets in the afternoon, the committees take action this month that would be presented to the board next month, so there'd be a month for anything that a committee considered to be looked at by our stakeholders, by the public, everyone. Moving to a one day a month for meetings, with the possibility, obviously, of having special meetings or emergency meetings when something arises, I believe would be a major step toward better governance of WMATA. We have a terrific leadership team that our general manager has assembled. They spend a lot of time preparing for our twice-a-month meetings and then sitting through our twice-a-month meetings. They ought to be running the railroad and the buses and Metro Access. They shouldn't be spending so much time serving the board. The board has a terribly important governance function, but it would be a step toward improved governance, in my judgment, and make the board less likely over coming years to be a management board rather than a policy board. This board really ought to be setting policy and adopting fares, and not getting into micromanaging this agency. We've hired a first-class team of executives to manage the agency. That shouldn't be our job. If they're not doing their job well, you get different people. That's the biggest job of the board. So I feel rather strongly that it would be positive for us to adopt the proposal, which was made last year by our chair and our general manager, to move in the coming calendar year to a process of normally meeting once a month. Now, there will be months when a committee will need another meeting because it's changing bylaws or, you know, considering a real estate transaction and you have to have a meeting or, you know, whatever. But as a general matter, I think we ought to put in here that the normal practice is that we meet once a month. Is there discussion? Mrs. Hahn.
Well, I would just note that there actually isn't any prescription one way or the other in the bylaws or in the procedures at the moment. It's resolved by the chairman proposing their schedule of meetings. And we did that actually rather purposefully because we wanted the chairman to have some flexibility in their conversation with the board about how the work should be arranged. So I'm less enamored of fixing it in the bylaws or in the procedures. I think, and one of the reasons we punted on this is we had a lot of new board members, and we were all trying to get up to speed. We're not there now. Maybe it's more possible. I don't know. But I think whoever the new chairman is has the capacity to deal with that.
Yeah, sure. Mr. Downing.
I would be concerned, again, what I said at the very beginning of the meeting, that I see our responsibilities, both setting policy and doing oversight, and be somewhat concerned that a long day to try to fit in every committee might not give adequate time to do the job we need to do. If we did our job effectively, maybe it would. I would suggest the existing process of having the chair set the schedule and perhaps working through what kind of a schedule could best achieve the purpose. It may well be, as we've seen, every committee does not have to meet every month. But I don't want to put us in a situation where we are so limited by time we're not doing the things that the public expects us to do.
There's also disparity around the table. So some of us who are not being paid to be on their full-time jobs either. And it's bread and butter. So I think we need to, one thing we can find is time to be here for 2 hours or 5 hours, but to be here for almost an entire day is
Is there further discussion? Well, hearing none, I take it we have a majority for leaving us silent and leaving it up to the chair. I hope our new chair has the same view that our outgoing chair had last year, because I strongly supported her view on this. And hope we can move to a process that I think would be better governance. But I hear my committee colleagues. What's the next item?
Mr. Barnes, the final recommendation is also on page 6, comment E5. Under section B, committee agendas, Mr. Fines recommends that the procedures require each committee chair to consult with the committee vice chair.
I didn't hear you.
We took care of that in the bylaws. We don't need to repeat it here.
Yeah, we don't want to adopt that. Right.
Mr. Barnes, can I make a motion?
Could I just raise a question on that? Would it make more sense to only include it in the procedures and not in the bylaws?
Actually, I like that suggestion, putting it in the procedures rather than the bylaws. Is that acceptable to you, Mrs. Hine?
Fine. I just want it to appear.
All right. Did you get that,
yes.
Carol? And I take it you have a motion.
I would move that the committee recommend the board adopt the procedures as amended by our discussion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there further discussion? Hearing none, the vote occurs on the motion. All in favor will vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and we will present the revision of the bylaws and the revision of the procedures to the board. Next item on our agenda is approval of board officer nominations. Our distinguished board chair has requested that we defer this matter, unless I hear objection to that, I will adhere to the chair's request. Hearing no objection, that matter will be deferred. Subject to a further call of the chair of this committee, and I will ask if there is any further business to come before the committee today. Hearing none, the committee stands adjourned.
And next time we'll start dealing with ethics. Is that the
yes? We'll do ethics, and please, as Mr. Sines suggested, take a look at it, because it's important and it's somewhat complex.